Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today on Off Talkle Empire, more tomato can for the Big Ten, and the zombie Scott Frost Nebraska era begins, and Michael Penix returns. Today on Off Talkle Empire.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Talkle Empire.
Welcome back to Off Talkle Empire, where now that we've gotten a recap of one hell of a week for the Big Ten West out of the way, it's time to preview what could be one hell of a week for the Big Ten West.
Yeah, so hell of a week can have a lot of different meanings, right? It's a very versatile term, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of possible meanings. My dog absolutely will not calm down because she doesn't get to see Steve Friend very often. So, on the one hand, you have, and this might not be the case, typically I do the outline early enough in the week that if there are betting lines on FCS games, they haven't come out yet. I didn't see one for Southern Illinois at Northwestern. They've definitely tripped over directional Midwest teams before. This doesn't
You're thinking about Northern Illinois, which is totally not the same as Southern. And you might also be thinking about Illinois State, which they got the prime Brock Spack years there for that one.
Wasn't there an Eastern Illinois in there somewhere?
They didn't. No. If they lost to Eastern, it was a long time ago.
You would remember. I'll trust you.
Yes. Yeah, no. The Illinois State one was 2016. That was prime Brock Spack. And also, famously, somebody proposed to their girlfriend at halftime of that game. That's just amazing.
Did she say yes?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so haunted.
Yeah, so then you got to watch the rest of that game.
Yeah.
And then you lost to Illinois State. That's amazing.
It's like, well, hope this isn't a sign. Oh my goodness. Elsewhere, tomato cans, UConn at Michigan, Wolverines laying 47. Remember, great teams cover, and they did not last week, so there you have it. It's a lot of points, but UConn is terrible. Toledo at Ohio State, 31-point betting margin for the Buckeyes. Toledo is one of the better MAC teams in a down MAC this year.
Toledo seems to be just about the only MAC team worth a shit this year.
Yeah, their defense is solid. Offense is not what it has been historically under the likes of Logan Woodside and so on.
But I'm seeing this right. Toledo is ranked one spot ahead of Illinois in the latest SP Plus rankings. And then the next, that puts them at 62. And the next MAC team that I can find is 90th place Miami of Ohio. So, yeah, that's... And then you got Central Michigan, which, boy, the Lou Nichols and the Lou Canoe were sunk pretty emphatically this past week.
It's starting to look like that was just like a run of excellent play for about a month, and that's not...
Well, and it happened in MAC play, which we're now, you know, it's getting kind into. Of a chicken-egg thing.
Yeah. One more week.
Where the MAC just, I don't know, MAC is not what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, but look, Ohio State's supposed to get Jackson Smith and Jigba back this week. I have to think they're going to try to make up for lost time for him for, you know, prominence of draft position and national award consideration. So expect him to get, you know, 9 or 10 catches, a couple hundred yards. They may well keep the pedal to the metal a little bit longer than they normally would in this kind of game. 31 points is a lot, but it's not 47, for example. So may want to consider that, even though Toledo does have a defense that could give at least the run game a little bit of trouble. I don't know how they keep up with Ohio State's receivers with a MAC secondary, but that game could be competitive a little bit longer than you would think. Sometimes those in-state MAC teams can stay close for a quarter, and then maybe that's enough time that margin doesn't get that big. New Mexico State at Wisconsin, because Jerry Kill didn't get enough punishment from his own team. He's going to go back to the team that used to stuff his head in a locker every year.
It's interesting. This is a 37-point line.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, as I've learned this week, Minnesota fans are really proud of their team right now. Like, unusually proud of their team for kind of being the only ones to not trip over anything yet. Whereas I'm just kind of happy to have avoided all the shrapnel last week. They seem to think that it was, like, a thing that they did, right? Where, like, they made all the other teams lose by just, like, you know, all the other teams were kind of repelled by the gravitational field of their own, of Minnesota's magnificence, that it was affecting their play. It was affecting the way that the ball was bouncing on their field.
Gophers just living rent-free in everybody else's
house. So if Wisconsin posts a similar stat line while not caring about New Mexico State, which we've been assured that Minnesota deeply does, what does it mean? Literally nothing.
Literally nothing.
Which is the same that every game against New Mexico State that the Big Ten plays means. I'm sorry, I don't really care about Minnesota yet, and that's not going to change because they play what I really think has supplanted Kansas as the single worst Power 5 program.
Cannot be many instances where a Power 5 program...
There is not enough data on Virginia.
...is giving 27 points to another Power 5 program.
This game was 30-0 Minnesota last year, and Minnesota wasn't phenomenal.
Alabama's had some lines like this in SEC play, but it's mostly against the likes of, you know, the Vanderbilts, South Carolinas, you know, the Mississippi States in their down years. You don't typically see a 27-point spread. And again, remember, even in your best estimation of Minnesota, they're not a team that should be giving up almost four touchdowns on a betting line to another Power 5 opponent. They just aren't. So make of that what you will. It does not augur an interesting game. There is one game with a large line that I do find interesting, and that would be Nevada at Iowa, where the Hawkeyes are now laying 23 is the last line I saw, to a team that just got incinerated by Incarnate Word. Of course, the flip side of that equation is, would the Hawkeyes really be laying 23 points if their offense played against empty field right now?
Well, what I want to know is, am I the only long-time college football fantasy degenerate that listens to this podcast? I do occasionally listen to this podcast.
Do you mean the one we're making right now?
Yeah.
What do you mean occasionally?
Anyway.
What the hell, man? We need these clicks.
Incarnate Word is coached by former fantasy stud G.J. Kinney, who used to play quarterback at Tulsa. About 10 years. Yeah, okay, you remember that name.
I do remember that name.
Yeah, so just an interesting little wrinkle there. So basically, Vegas thinks that Iowa can score 23 points with defense and special teams. And by flipping the field.
Well, that's three defensive touchdowns and a safety. That's not really all that unheard of. That could be done. The real problem is, by losing Charlie Jones, they don't have a return threat to score anymore. Maybe if... I think Gavin Williams played last week. Keegan Johnson still hasn't. But I think... Hasn't Arlen Bruce been doing the returning? I don't know. Whenever Iowa has or is supposed to have the football, my mind tends to wander. You can understand. So anyway, if you can't get four or more touchdowns on the board against this defense and they still don't make any changes after that, fans should boycott. That's Millen-era Lions type of infuriating behavior by your team. You don't have to support them. I know that, again, we referenced this obliquely in the Scott Frost discussion in the recap episode. You do not owe a team your loyalty. They should want to be attracting you. It should not be part of your fundamental identity. Like, I've been going to these games for 60 years. I'm going to go and support my team. Go Hawks, even though it's like pouring a cold bowl of porridge down my pants every day. It's just, do something better with your time, man. You have the entire realm of human knowledge in your pocket in the form of your smartphone. Learn how to play Mahjong. Download Duolingo. Do something more useful with your time than watching Iowa football. Do something better. I know you can.
I'm over here making the Jack Nicholson face.
Moving on, because that's enough discussion of that game. Rutgers at Temple at a neutral site in Philly. Rutgers giving 17. Again, for that offense, a little bit rich for my blood, although Temple is also turbo bad. We referenced this a couple weeks ago. There are a lot more really super bad teams in FBS than there used to be.
I feel like the transfer portal has made it a lot quicker of a deal for teams' rosters to fall apart. There's just a lot of times your core is going to get picked clean. I mean, you've got to... The other thing is, you don't always, when you bring in a coach, you don't always get their entire staff, right?
Right.
So if sometimes your best case scenario is you bring in an entire staff and they, you know, immediately go and secure the existing, because that's the first thing you got to do now. You got to recruit your own roster back.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's just the easiest thing. Like the easiest sorts of players is, but it used to just be that it was assumed that you would have your own players, but now you basically just, the entire roster is empty. You first have to start by recruiting your own players to make other teams not come and get them. And you're not even going to, you know, if you're Temple, it's going to be a lot harder.
Right, and we say, because it's like in the context of these games that we mentioned, Temple, UConn, New Mexico State, Colorado, like it, so many terrible, terrible teams. Nevada is really, like... terrible teams that have fallen from pretty good to just like the only games they win will be when they play each other. I mean, UMass, Hawaii, there are a solid 15 teams where it's like, if you have any kind, if like, if your team is bowl caliber, you're going to beat the crap out of that team scheduling them. And it's, you know, it'll help teams pad their win totals. I guess there's that to be said. I can't find an interesting angle on this game though. Temple's quarterback is still Dwan Mathis. Guy who went to high school at Oak Park, right, like 2 miles away from where we're sitting.
Well, Ramon Davis, for instance.
Yeah.
He bailed.
Yeah, right. So, but I can't find anything else in terms of this game to make an interesting angle. Maybe Rutgers' quarterback situation normalizes somewhat, but they could continue just playing two guys. I mean, it feels like if they want to find their ceiling, they need to just give more of the snaps to Winsat. But Evan Simon plays well enough for them to succeed with him out there. He's a relatively accurate passer, so they could keep rolling with the two quarterback thing for a while. It doesn't feel like a long term solution, but I do think Rutgers is at a spot where quietly they realize they need to win more games, and so it's kind of by any means necessary.
Well, we're also on year three of that, so you know, maybe it is a long term solution.
Maybe, but. Getting hired at the same time as Mel Tucker invites some unfair comparisons, unfortunately. SMU at Maryland. This could be an absolute fireworks display. You got to remember, SMU still has Tanner Mordecai.
And most that Sonny Dykes offense still very much installed there.
Yeah, which again, that's an unusual situation where despite staying in the same city, going to a hated rival, Dykes was not able to bring the core of his team with him. Always an interesting thing that sort of thing happens.
I wonder how in the hell that happened.
That's the thing about the nature of modern football, all the coach movement, the portal, NIL player movement. There are so many interesting stories out there.
Yeah, when people are not in lockstep, it's kind of about like, well, wait a second. Did people maybe not like him? Is he maybe an asshole?
Maybe, and it's, again, this is where like, an enterprising sports journalist could ferret out these stories. We certainly do not qualify as that. But
are you sure? We have our journalistic reputation to protect, after all.
It's true. We are a news source, and we need to do everything. We have to keep that in mind with our publishing practices, and we're going to be better from now on.
I like making
be sure of that.
I like making jokes for an audience of our site's administrators.
So anyway, this promises to be a fireworks display. I believe Terps are given 3.5 points here, you know, considering they're at home. That's basically a pick'em, because you typically expect home field to be between 3 and 6 points in college, depending on the intensity of the home field advantage. She's not going to stop pursuing that, I will assure you of that.
She's got a nose for the ball.
Ball is life. Minnie, of course, has a Kong football that is her
life,
one true pride and joy. Ball truly is life. She will try to take it from you. Okay, there we go. All right. Penn State at Auburn. Well, let's go ahead and get an SEC coach fired in the first month of the season. Can we do that?
James forgot Franklin? What Brian Harsin looked like, and I saw the screen cap of him where he looks like Max Headroom.
Yeah, you see, right? It's like, you don't generally, like, yeah, there are plenty of guys I don't really have a percept of in my head. And then you see a picture of him, it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
He's a guy who at this point is going to get fired as soon as they get a new AD.
Yeah, but
he was not popular with Auburn fans or the athletic director, and he, you know,
the fans can't fire him directly though, or at least not yet. Auburn feels like the first school that might figure that out, but
you mean the second school, Maryland?
Well, so anyway, Penn State's going on the road here. Auburn's always a reasonably talented team, but Penn State honestly feels like the better constructed one right now. You always have some qualms about James Franklin in a big game, but look, they've got the more experienced quarterback. They've got a lot of talent on defense. If they just play Singleton and remember to throw the ball to Parker Washington, which is a stove that you and I are not going to put our hands on again until we know he's the number one receiver that he should be. They have the weapons. They have the quarterback. If the offensive line can deal with Auburn's front at all, because Auburn's defensive line is always good. Minnie, I know, it's a real problem. Auburn's defensive line continues to drip with talent, even though it's been years since they were relevant. It's a real concern, but I'm just hoping they fire Brian Harsin so there's another SEC roster that my school can plunder. That's why I'm pulling for Penn State in this game. I'm nothing if not transparent.
So, then there's Western Kentucky at Indiana. The Hoosiers are 6.5-point favorites at home, and it will be interesting to see how their secondary copes with an air raid.
Yeah, considerably less threatening of an air raid than last year, though. Austin Reed has been pretty good as their new starter after Bailey Zappe. He did ward off Jarrett Dagey, the journeyman who came in, I think, last from West Virginia. Yeah, he's still... Did you not hear about that? Dagey transferred to Western Kentucky, lost the job to this guy, and then transferred again to Troy, where he is now the backup there also. One of those guys where it's like, how on earth are you still around? Get used to it, man. There's going to be a couple more years here where it's like, you have been here forever, because, yeah, with the COVID year not counting, people will have been around forever. Anyway,
played for the 2017 Bowling Green Falcons.
Yeah. Yeah, so Reed's the new starter. The two weapons that really made that offense go, Mitchell Tinsley is now at Penn State, Jarrett Stearns, Buccaneers, I believe. So it's a much less menacing air raid than they were running last year. Still a difficult defense, or still a difficult offense to deal with. But Western Kentucky has never been any good at defense. If Indiana can't find a way to get into the 30s pretty comfortably here, then it's going to be a continuing sign of problems. They needed a maximum effort full game against Idaho last week to get to 35. Oh, you want signs of progress. Another very interesting game in the non-conference here, Purdue at Syracuse. Boilers favored by only a single point on the road against a Syracuse team that might turn out not to be dead after all.
The Louisville thrashing aged pretty well.
Yeah.
When Louisville went and looked reasonably functional, pretty well took care of UCF in the second half, despite just not being able to put any points on the board. They just, their defense absolutely shut down John Rhys Plumlee. And
you can always tell, you can usually tell when one of us has a particular bad beat from JMC that we're still not quite moving past.
Well, but yeah, point is, UCF, very talented team. Yeah. Louisville, yeah, I don't believe was favored in that one. They won that one on the road. And so, yeah, Syracuse may very well be able to, you know, test them in ways that they have not quite been tested, because Sean Clifford certainly shouldn't be the kind of rushing threat that Garrett Schrader is.
No, and of course, perhaps the least known superstar in the country would be Sean Tucker, Syracuse's running back.
They were quietly very good at running the ball last year.
Yeah, not typically.
Nobody's really talked about Syracuse since they fell off from beating Clemson the one time.
Right. Well, because their trajectory towards the end of last year, you know, getting back into that conversation of who's the worst P5 team in the country, like, Syracuse had their name in that conversation. that they found Tucker and now have a running complement to go alongside
him. I don't think they've quite been there in the, oh my God, in the Dino Babers era, but it certainly looked like they could fall that way. They found an identity down the stretch last year. They really did. Yeah. Once they benched Tommy DeVito, and of course, like their old uniforms, sent him off to Illinois for us to use.
Right. Well,
we got their old uniform. We got Tommy DeVito wearing the uniform from that he used to wear in 2019 now.
Yeah. So the thing that Syracuse figured out is, man, we've been letting Tommy DeVito get smashed with sledgehammers for 4 years, and it hasn't really worked very good. Maybe we should not do. Why don't we find a quarterback who doesn't need pass protection and like run an offense that doesn't require pass protection, and maybe that'll work. And look, it did. It improved a little bit. So, picking up Schrader, who would have fit the Joe Moorhead offense at Mississippi State like a glove, but instead comes to Syracuse to operate this this running attack, a lot of zone read stuff with himself and Sean Tucker. Not a bad landing spot, honestly. Other major games in the conference, Oklahoma at Nebraska. We'll see if the circle the wagons, nobody believes in us, which is true in this case, thing with Nebraska gets them anything, is a 13.5-point home dog.
Oklahoma had a very weird first half against Kent State last week.
They certainly did.
They were down 3-0 until the very end of the half. Or did they go into halftime down 3-0?
I think it was 7-3 at half, but
I'm not really sure what Dylan Gabriel was doing.
Regardless, I mean, look, Kent State, I actually think, is a pretty good MAC team whose record will deceive you because they play this unfathomable gauntlet. Like, they've already played Washington this year, played Oklahoma. They're playing somebody else of that caliber. Like, last year they played Alabama and a couple other P5 teams. Like, they must be hard up for money is the point. Because,
well, you know, to shut down Oklahoma with very talented quarterback Dylan Gabriel, not to mention
Marvin Jones still there.
They've got a lot. I mean, they still got about half of the talent that Lincoln Riley brought there. They didn't all go out there with him.
Yeah.
Also, remember, he brought in better wide receivers from other Power 5 schools to USC. So, they got the likes of Theo Weiss still at Jaden Hazelwood. Is he still there?
No, Hazelwood went to Arkansas. They have Marvin Mims, though, as the other main guy.
Ah, okay, right. In any case, still too much talent to be getting shut out at the half by Kent State.
Yeah, so we'll see. Because, again, like, if not, I don't know that I necessarily think Nebraska gets all the way off the mat to get a win here. Because last week had to take it out of them. Even if you find a little surge of motivation in the, all right, let's prove that we're still Nebraska, it's just a lot to process in the course of a quick turnaround. I would like Nebraska to cover that spread, though, because, you know, to beat the spread, because 13.5, I mean, how many, again, the calling card of the Scott Frost Huskers has been losing one score games.
I would like to basically, yeah, you'd like to see them do their old coat to solid, and when they fuck it up right at the end to come away with a 3-point loss, I hope that with a smile on their face and a tear in their eye,
just pointing up to the heavens where Scott Frost is looking down from purgatory, or
did it for you, big guy.
More likely, I mean, you can buy a lot of land in Nebraska for $15 million. R2, don't growl at people walking by.
And then Michigan State at Washington.
This is why R2 is growling. He's been looking forward to this matchup all week. He's been talking a lot of shit, even though I have to explain to him, look, we got the dog DNA test thing done, and he's actually not nearly as much husky as we thought. But he's still...
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, he's a straight-up mutt. Husky is the biggest piece, but it's like 14% or something, and that just happens to be what he looks like. So anyway... this line crossed the bridge. Initially, it was MSU giving 3.5. Now Washington is favored by 3. Vegas always knows. Mel Tucker has
Vegas
been...
doesn't know about Northwestern and Duke.
Yeah, that's true. But that's probably because they're not motivated to know, because there's no action on a game between two tiny private schools. Mel Tucker has been kind of evasive about Jaden Reed's status here. He was a little dinged up last week. He's always a little dinged up. I just think it's as simple as this. Big Ten teams traveling to the West Coast almost never come away successfully. I picked Washington to win the game straight up in our picks. I'm sticking with that. I would love to be pleasantly surprised. It would be great if this game has the same kind of feel as the Miami game last year, where, despite it being a difficult circumstance, their preparation is adequate and they find a way to play well enough to win. Washington's going to be a much better team than they were last year. Their talent level was never as bad as Jimmy Lake's coaching me. It seemed like, and Kalen DeBoer imported a quarterback. All their receivers are actually healthy, which was not the case when they played a Big Ten team and got embarrassed last year. So,
I almost forgot that you have to go up against Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, the most Dovahkiin sounding quarterback we will have played yet. Well, Jack Salopek, I can see that. Anyway,
yes, a Kalen DeBoer with Jack Salopek at the quarterback.
So anyway, I would expect Michigan State probably loses that game. I would love to be surprised though, and I think it should be close. Elsewhere nationally, game of the week is probably going to be Miami at Texas A&M. And the Yauerbein players, all crime is legal now, ain't you heard? Bull.
The Purge.
USC hosts portal resistor Jake Haener and Fresno State. That could be of some
for
interest.
For great justice.
Old Dominion tries for their second in-state ACC pelt of the year against, oh boy, Virginia.
Oh, man. I did see some interaction between like Virginia Tech and Virginia fans talking about like, oh my God, our rivalry game is going to be like Apple Cup was like 10 years ago.
It's going to be, it's going to delve beneath the Crapple Cup. Reeling Notre Dame at 0-2 welcomes a Cal team powered by Purdue transfer quarterback Jack Plummer. I'm sure that won't cause them any heartburn. BYU goes to Oregon, continuing their theme of, yeah, we got a bunch of 30-year-olds. They know how to travel and not get jet lagged. We'll go anywhere. Georgia Tech agreed to play Ole Miss in the non-conference for some reason, even knowing that at the end of the year they also have to play Georgia. What the hell is the matter with them? All these athletic departments just so bad with money. I don't understand. Like, what happens to the TV money? I know the ACC doesn't pay out as much, but you shouldn't have to take bye games from two SEC teams. Do they just want to get rid of Jeff Collins, or what are they doing here?
Well, Jed Fish has made Arizona pleasantly interesting through two games. So, his reward is to host North Dakota State. Yeah, you're damn right, Minnie. If I were Jed Fish, I'd be going...
Not only is it a Dakota, it's that Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
As we said before, it's never a good idea to host a Dakota because you don't get credit for beating FCS teams because everyone thinks that none of them are any good. But there's a pretty good chance they could beat you. And that's the Alabama of Division II, of lower Division I football.
I miss when Louisiana Tech was a threat. Those were fun times. I don't think they can take advantage of any hesitancy or failure to develop by DJ we fumbled away.
So before we go into that, though, one more FCS game that should be mentioned. Number 10, Arkansas welcomes Missouri State. Oh, that's just an interesting bye game from a team that's kind of nearby. I wonder if it's like, oh, wait just a second. Who is the coach at Missouri State? Bobby Petrino.
Oh, my goodness.
My brother's actually a Missouri State alum.
When they
hired Petrino, I was like, damn, that's kind of a big move for you guys. You going to, like, get some tickets? Go. He's like, nah.
He lives like... Okay, because you got to understand, Missouri State, I only know this because of how deep in the weeds I got on the Lovie Smith defensive coordinator replacement thread. You know, dude. When he spent a whole year jacking us around and been like, no, I'm going to hire my kid to coach the linebackers. You know, the one that's not in jail for pimping. I'm going to hire that kid. But it found out that Missouri State had, like, some very talented defensive coach as their head coach just because they could pay him, like, the bare minimum that the job required. And there was a lot of speculation that they were going to shut down their fucking program. And now they hired Bobby Petrino.
Well, that was, like, 3 years ago. But yeah, I guess my brother's a big football fan. I asked him, like, so you're, like, going to go check out a game? He's like, nah, man, we're still going to suck. He, like, watches basically every NFL game that happens. A little bit of college. He's more of an NFL guy. But
so, again, he's wrong. Missouri State is competitive. They are 2-0 this year, which, again, this is a team that was going, like, you know, 0-1 wins a year before. This is a terrible, terrible team. With wins against Tennessee Martin and Central Arkansas.
and, you know, relevant at the FCS level.
Yeah, so, Central Arkansas is a team that's been top 10 in recent years.
I still think the most likely outcome here is Arkansas wins by about 70, but...
Obviously, but yeah. Sure, they're probably going to be agitated for, you know, a few minutes.
At any occasion that you can, if you follow this sport, it is very important to think back on exactly how incredibly entertaining the Bobby Petrino exit from Arkansas was. Every aspect of it. In particular, the mental image that I think most of our listeners to this podcast probably have of him at the press conference wearing his Sugar Bowl hat and the soft collar around his neck, his entire face a raspberry.
But just shit-eating grin.
Yeah. Just like, I'm going to get away with this. And then, even at Arkansas, he
well, didn't get away with here it. I stand before you, hat in hand. I'm just a coach standing in front of a media, asking them to love me. Mississippi State takes on LSU. See if they can get Brian Kelly another loss. See if Brian Kelly has any more interesting things to say about his own judgment of his players. And, of course, you know, every game that Mississippi State plays is probably going to be interesting as long as Mike Leach remains their coach.
In one way or another. Texas, after giving a max effort die on the field, not quite enough game against Alabama, welcomes in UTSA. I'm sure there's nothing to worry about there. Frank Harris, one of the better group of five quarterbacks you'll see. And Western Michigan tries for the sweep against Pitt in the last 2 years. I will say their defense is better than I thought it would be. And Pitt's coming off an embarrassment at the hands of Tennessee.
I think that they just don't have the experience on offense to do with this. It was a very special group that they had at Michigan last year. Central Michigan.
Western Michigan beat them last year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was a very special group that they had at Western Michigan, which is also true at Pittsburgh, but the talent level is higher. It makes it a little more replaceable.
And I'm not predicting that this is going to happen, but the truth is, Western Michigan does still have Josh Grooms. They still have a tandem of, well, I mean, Sean Tyler's an NFL caliber back. I don't know if LaDarius Jefferson, but a 1-2 punch in the backfield. Their offensive scheme was very well coordinated. I was very impressed, considering it was Sal Peck's first start. Don't be surprised, is all I'm saying. Don't be surprised.
And, of course, there was one more game I was going to bring up, and I've scrolled right past it. Oh, yes. The Kansas Jayhawks head to Houston, looking to improve to 3-0.
Houston just joining the Big 12 a year early, I guess. I thought that wasn't happening. But here they are. They just lost to Texas Tech last week, now playing Kansas. I wonder if they're just going to, like, send the commissioner a letter, like, we haven't received our cut of the conference TV revenues. Just wondering when that check's going to hit the old account. Love you. See you at the conference meetings. Send. See if that works. You know, why not? People are in charge of stuff for no reason.
And, of course, one more thing of interest is a rematch of the game that everybody brings up every time they try to defend a coach who is falling on his face in a new job. Well, look, sure, it's okay that Scott Frost just lost to Georgia Southern and, like, now is, you know, 5-22 in one-score games because Rome wasn't built in a day. After all, Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe in 2007. Say it with me. You know who is sick of hearing about that like 50 times a year for the last 15 years? Nick Saban.
They're going to win by 120 points.
He is going to Cumberland them.
Would be bad. Anyway, that concludes our preview of Week 3. We thank you for joining us once again on Off Tackle Empire Mini Squeak the Ball.
Ooh, Dog Waggle Empire is at its loudest volume in a long time. This is a satisfying conclusion.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!